Welcome to Money Talk with Tiff, a podcast where we discuss everything money, from tips and tricks to current events. Follow me on my journey to become debt-free and meet other cool people along the way. I am your host, Tiffany Grant. Now let's talk money. We are Podcasters United to condemn the tragic murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and many, many others at the hands of police. This is a continuation of the systemic racism pervasive in our country since its inception, and we are committed to standing against racism in all its forms. We believe that to be silent is to be complicit. We believe that Black lives matter. We believe that Black lives are more important than property. We believe that we have a responsibility to use our platforms to speak out against this injustice whenever and wherever we are witness to it. In creating digital media, we have built audiences that return week after week to hear our voice, and we will use our voices to speak against anti-Blackness and police brutality. And we encourage our audiences to be educated, engaged, and to take action. With that being said, this special episode of the Money Talk with Tiff podcast was recorded live on Facebook, so please disregard any rough edits or rough cuts. Enjoy. All right, so I think we're live now. Let's see. Okay. All right, so thank you for joining me today. So this is another episode of the Money Talk with Tiff podcast. I am doing something I've never done before, but I felt like this would be a wonderful opportunity to make this happen. I have Eugenie George on the line, and I've had her on my podcast before. Back in episode 11, we talked about ancestral trauma and how it affects your money. So not just Black people, but all people of color. So she actually wrote a book about it. And the book is called Our Money Stories, A No BS Guide to Financial Wellness. And like I said, she dives deep into ancestral trauma and how all of that plays a role in your money. So when I decided that I was going to make this episode about the Black dollar and, you know, Ujima and Ujamaa and where we go from here with all the unrest and things like that, I was like, I have to have Eugenie on because she is the expert. So thank you so much, Eugenie, for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
So Eugenie, last time we talked, we were live at FinCon, which is a whole nother story in itself right now because some things have come out about that. Long story short, I will no longer be attending, even though I enjoyed it and I met some very good people such as yourself there. But we're not going to harbor on that, you know, too long. In your book, you talk about ancestral trauma and how that affects your money, and not just Black people, but all people of color. And so in your, just a brief overview of what ancestral trauma means and what your research has found.
So basically it means that the problems or the things that you're stressed about now may be because of your family's history. As in a nutshell, that's kind of what it is. I found this out by listening to a podcast written by Being with Krista Trippett. And I listened to this researcher and she talked about how they were doing research on Holocaust survivors. And they wanted to see if the PTSD from the Holocaust survivors have been passed down to generations. Well, it got like lots of reviews on it, literally everything's American Scientific, like NPR, you name it. And they ended up debunking, a woman of color actually ended up debunking the research and basically said, it's not a big enough sample size. There's also a lot of talk around epigenetics, which means like you can change your genes and like, you know, all that stuff. So it kind of got thrown out, but that idea stuck with me. And it kind of led me to this journey of me understanding my family's trauma. And then I interviewed 40 women and I kind of asked them, well, why don't you tell me about your money story? And basically what I did from that was take what are like the laws in place that has to do with the dollar? How is that affecting our long-term results?
Before we hopped off or got kicked off, we were talking about ancestral trauma. Miss Eugenie George, which is here with me, she wrote a book called Our Money Stories, A No BS Guide to Financial Wellness, which talks about not only African-Americans and Black people, it talks about other people of color and minorities as well. And what she was just saying is ancestral trauma is what has gone on in the past, like with your ancestors and things like that, can spill into today. And she was talking about the research that she had come across that talked about that. And that's how she got the inspiration for her book. Did I recap it all?
You did. Pretty well. Yeah.
Okay, so we were talking about the Black tax, and that's where we left off. So I was like, I'm glad it kind of cut off there. I mean, I'm not glad, but at least it was like after a point was made. And so we can right back up. So right. I wanted to mention, because I went to like an inclusion, diversity thing in Winston-Salem, and we watched a short film called Segregated by Design. And it talks about the Black tax and the color of money and the color of law and how all of that plays a part and how we are marginalized to this day. So what are your thoughts on that?
That's a whole lot. I mean, that's basically 8 books, but I think in a nutshell, the Black tax means basically, depending on who you are, you're going to be discriminated against wherever you go. And that goes in, plays out in health. It plays out in talking to people, just basic interactions. It plays out in microaggressions. And it has a long-term effect between money and also your mental health. If you don't feel comfortable with yourself, and if you don't feel comfortable with even learning about money, you're already disbarred. So that's basically what the Black tax is about. My purpose and all the research that I did was kind of find out, okay, where were these taxes and like where did they happen? And so I tracked and traced back from after slavery, and basically I looked at Latinx, Native American, Asian American, and African American stories, and I looked at all of the research in there and said, like, okay, what are all these laws that are actually barring folks from achieving wealth or achieving anything? And then I started interviewing women of color and said, well, why don't you tell me about your money stories? And it kind of played really well into like what's going on right now, and then also what's happening in our current situation. So we can use our location, wherever we live, and actually find out the history of the Black tax. So, even if you're Asian American, there's a lot of really interesting laws that have been put in place, and a lot of us don't really know how it's affecting our money.
Absolutely. And anytime I think about this topic and talk about this topic, I think back to when I was in my MBA program, we had to take leadership. And part of that, we had to look at implicit biases. And we also looked at a map of our city, right? And with that map, you can see a clear line, clear as day, of where African American populations are and white populations are. And it just goes back to the laws that were put in place way before we were alive, way before, just going way back. Really not even way back. Let me pause right there. It's not even that long ago, honestly. Mm-hmm. But the laws that were put in place at that time where it segregated the city. And so that keeps perpetuating to this day. And so, you know, one side of town may be named the Black side, you know what I mean? Right. Or that's not the good side of town. And so it just goes back to the, you know, the 60s, the 50s, and then going all the way back to like the 1800s, you know, there was a Land Seizure Act in 1865. And what that did was it took the property from the Black people and made it so that the white people bought it. And so it's like, and in my experience, that's where the wealth is, right? So when you own property, you own land, that's where the wealth is. I've worked with clients where, when I used to work at the firm, and they were making million-dollar deals just selling property that was passed on from generation to generation. So it's important to note that this is not new. This is not, you know, this is not something that is new or just happened or anything. It's a systematic or systemic marginalization of people. And so I wanted people to just make sure they understand that, because like you said, awareness is where it starts. So when you were doing your research and interviewing these other people of color, you were like, and then you started connecting the dots. And so that's what I wanted to do this podcast about, is just awareness of different things. Awareness that there are laws and there are taxes and there are things that do purposely marginalize. So with all that being said, so I don't want to spend too much time on how we got here. I want to spend more time on solutions, right? Mm-hmm. So part of what I wanted to talk about was, and if anybody is not familiar with Kwanzaa, it is a celebration. I believe it started in the 60s or 70s. I may be incorrect.
Yeah, at CSU Long Beach. So the professor from Long Beach, he created this holiday called Kwanzaa.
Yeah. And it's amazing. Well, let's pause right there, because it's amazing how one person's idea can spread like wildfire. And now even to this day, people are still celebrating it. So there are seven principles in Kwanzaa. The ones that I wanted to talk about today are, we'll start with Ujima. And so Ujima means collective work and responsibility. And that's something that we're seeing right now as we speak, with all the protests and everything going on. People are collectively working together. And it's important that we do that in order to make a change. Make a change. I know you said you're going out to protest today. And I've seen a lot of talk about, you know, protesting doesn't make a change. Like, what is the point? Things like that. But with the protest, you have to have action, right? Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts around that?
Here's the thing with protesting and different things like that. We this is our first time that we're going to do that, because there is, Ujima is all about collective work and understanding that. But we've done a lot of mental work. I'm just saying that, me and my family, prior to even doing that. So even if you're not ready to go out there, you don't have to. That's a completely normal thing. What I've been focusing on the past week is, one, just checking in with a lot of folks that are holding space for people. So it may be Black folks, it may be women of color, it may just be someone that I know that's kind of, they're the glue to like their friend group. And so just checking in on them, seeing how they're doing. I have a lot of friends that live in Minneapolis. I have some friends that live everywhere. So it's really important to check in on where everyone is and how they're feeling. That's like the aspect of community and connection. The second thing is, there's a lot of trauma that we all have to go through. This is like really uncomfortable for a lot of people. I'm like sometimes just sitting back and watching people just clap back or, you know, do call out culture. And a lot of times right now, we really need to call in and see where we are with our own mental health. Because the thing that's happening with a lot of folks, particularly like listening to white folks talk about this, they've never heard. They never knew that this stuff happened. It's like a lot of folks have had this conversation over and over again. Like, you know, if you walk, make sure you're walking super fast. Don't talk to certain people, yada, yada, yada. But some people have never had that conversation. And that that is a lot for them to even see something like that happen, right? And now communities of color are now speaking out, and everyone is pouring out their trauma, right? So I think the most important thing is with this piece is kind of see where you are at with your childhood trauma. So there's a great group, the CDC and Kaiser did research on adverse childhood experiences. And so what that means is they can figure out your long-term health effects based off of finding out what happened during your childhood. Start with that. Like, literally, I don't care what color you are, start with that. Because if you go, oh my gosh, I'm having all these issues, you're going to be more compassionate for folks. You're going to be empathetic to folks. You're going to be more aware of what's going on. And so I think that's actually something that's really important to really kind of start with you first. There's a really great book called Peace in Every Step. And it's by Tetset Mihai. And basically, he talks about how you have to do a lot of inner work first before you can just always go out. Of course, go out and protest, but also recognize that we are wounded folks and we are now just coming to awareness of it. And our families, some of our families have no clue. I just asked my mom and she was like, this happened to you? I'm like, yeah, all this stuff happened, you know? And so people don't want to talk about their trauma, but that's the thing that's affecting the world right now.
Absolutely. And see, that's one thing I was halfway joking, but halfway serious when I posted this on Facebook. But I was like, I would like to look at this as the Great Awakening. So when this mm-hmm. goes back in history, like, I want it to be called the Great Awakening, because yeah. it's like people, not just people of color, but even white people, they are now starting to see what is really going on. And it's crazy because, you know, some people were saying, well, you know, you don't live in Minnesota, why does it matter to you? Or you don't know George Floyd personally, why does it matter to you? And the thing is, this happens worldwide, mm-hmm. worldwide. Even here in my city, I've had instances, and I know people that have had instances with the local police and mm-hmm. with racism in the courtrooms and things like that. So it's not exempt. Like, what we need to do is to call people in, like you said, call in the allies, call in the people that are for us, and have them help us make this change. Because the thing is, we can't be divided anymore. We can't, because that's how evil wins. They divide and conquer. So we need to come together. And that brings me to another Kwanzaa principle, and that's Ujamaa. So Ujamaa is cooperative economics. So that, my friends, is how I feel we should move forward from here on out. And that's why I named this episode The Black Dollar, mm-hmm. because we need to come together financially make a space to where racism doesn't win. And so what are your thoughts on that?
Well, okay, so right now, some of y'all don't know this, but right now, the wealth industry and the personal finance industry is getting heated. Like, I am sitting back and watching these conversations play out, and it's because a lot of folks don't understand the racial oppression that's happened within the past, you know, 200, 300 years. And so you're having a lot of, like, people of color that are speaking up on their experiences that they've had working in finance, that they've had working in spaces that have to do with financial institutions. And now you're having folks that have never talked about race ever and have always lived in a bubble, not know what the heck is going on. But if we look at history, it kind of lets us know why there are some taxes or why people have been barred. So I'm going to break down four really common stereotypes and talk about how it affects the money. So if we look at Latinx native culture, it's kind of, I'm putting those two together because I was just corrected that I should really think about that because Latinx is a lot of different cultures. So I'm trying to be really cognizant of that. So if you look at Latinx culture, there's a lot of different things that play a role into your dollar. One of the things that play into your role with your dollar is if immigration. So for the past 100 years, there's been some weird law that has been passed or some policies that have been passed that basically just rounds up a bunch of folks that identify as Latinx and brings them to a country. And some of them have been born in this country. Some of them have never lived in that country, and they just round people up. And they've been doing this successfully since 1940. So if you look at that right now, if you look at Latinx women, their equal pay day is in November, which means out of all the women of color, theirs is last. So if your dollar, you're getting paid 53 cents every dollar that a white male makes, that is going to affect your money. The same thing goes back to African Americans. I mean, we could talk about a lot of topics and a lot of policies, but to me, the thing that I always talk about is Black Wall Street, because that's kind of the thing that everyone's talking about. It just, if you've watched The Watchmen, they talk about that history. But basically, in the early 1930s, 40s, there was a Black community that was thriving, was doing really well, and a bunch of folks came in and basically trashed and tore down that entire city within 2 days. And the news was calling it a riot, a race riot. And it was all based off of facts that were not true. So things like that, we're kind of seeing that being played in the same realm where someone like George Floyd, who had a counterfeit $20 bill, is now being allegedly having a $20 bill is being how he was handled. So you can literally trace it back. So if we look at Asian American cultures, particularly with laws in place, for in the early 1900s, Asian Americans weren't even allowed to come here anymore. Like, they were here in the late 1800s, and then they just were barred from it. And then if you actually look at where Asian Americans are right now with their wealth, because a lot of people love to say, a lot of minority, they're doing really well. Like, they're crushing it with their money. They're yada, yada, yada. It's like, those are actually folks from people coming into the United States. So that has a really different way of you viewing the gap, the wealth gap. The other thing with that in particular, if you are Asian American, is most folks weren't even allowed to have citizenship until 1960, when the Civil Rights Act passed, and then 1940. So that means that's a lot of older folks that are alive right now. They're living off of Medicare and Medicaid. So when you're saying, like, this girl's making this much money, you don't know how much her dollar's going. You don't know how much she might be holding money for the whole entire family. So be really careful. And then lastly, Native American culture, I mean, that is at a whole, the practices of redlining, I will say that that has to do with how we navigate the space of Native American land. So I'm saying we as America, not myself personally, because I'm not a part of that, but I'm saying, like, America has strategically removed folks that are from their land, and then will have barricades around the land. And when there's oil or something that pops up that's a natural resource, that gets moved. And then once that gets moved, then all of a sudden, like, those folks that could have gotten money, they don't get it. So I think a lot of folks need to really recognize where they live, the communities that they serve, what is the history around their community and how it affects their entire dollar. Living in Philadelphia, I grew up in California. I live in a city where 45% of the population is Black, but 70% of the COVID deaths have been Black folks. Poverty is at an all-time high here. And it took me a while to actually read about the city that I live in and learn all about the history, and particularly learn about how Black America in Philadelphia, they were actively trying to have banks, have communities, have neighborhoods. And even just 30 years ago, they bombed a portion of the city, and that area was predominantly Black. Now it's 30 years ago. I'm 33. So you really have to just kind of take it slowly and think about where you are with your neighborhood, where we are with our community, and then where we are with our culture.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you so much for breaking that all down. because I didn't know a lot of that. And one thing I will put out there to the audience is one movie, I guess it's considered a movie, maybe a short film, that I watched was Netflix Explained the Racial Wealth Gap. And when I say that shed light on so many different things, I was sitting there like, oh, like, because it's and like Eugene was saying, it doesn't just affect Black people, it affects all people of color. We have all been, I hate to keep using the word marginalized because I don't really like that term, but I don't know how else to describe it. But we have all been disproportionately affected with a lot of different things. And just like I posted this morning about Bank of America giving, what, $1 billion to the cause or whatever, I'm like, they're just giving us some of our money back. Because when you look at bank fees and things like that, it disproportionately affects people of color. And so I'm like, yeah, it's a good gesture. I appreciate it. Thank you. But also, it's like, this is just some of the money that is owed back to us. So.
It's really tricky, and I would advise folks that are thinking about what should I read, where should I go? If you are white, you should read White Fragility, because it has a lot to do with how you navigate the world and how other folks don't see the same way as you do. And then in terms of cultures, I mean, I would say The Color of Wealth is the best book that you can read, because it breaks down all the cultures and it says, this is what happens. Here's how it happens. And so, yeah, I think that's really important.
Okay, and since we're throwing out books for education, also The Color of Law, that goes into, what laws were passed and things like that. And then The Color of Money, which of course I love talking about money, that's why we're here, but that goes into how it affects finances. And so so speaking of the financial industry in an uproar right now, and we're watching it all unfold, but I've heard stories of where people worked in banking settings, other people of color, and they shared with me that, when they look at loan applications, they try to peg whether you're Black or white, depending on what you're applying for. And, to me, I'm like, wow, like that's really what goes on behind the scenes. And, he was telling me that his coworkers were laughing and joking and making bets on, whether this person was Black or white and just thinking that that's okay. And I say that to say, we need people to start calling out these practices. We need people to shed light on these people and these practices so that way it stops. I've been posting a lot lately, and one of the things that I've been posting is silence equals acceptance. So if you're silent about an issue that comes to you, somebody acting inappropriate, and you're silent about it, that tells them that you accept their behavior. And so that's how things keep perpetuating. And so going back to Ujima and Ujamaa, you know, we have to work together in Umoja, which is unity. We have to work together to make these changes. And so, you know, a lot of people have been talking about holding back our dollars, you know, and making sure that it only circulates with people of color or and or allies. And I fully support that idea. I think we need to start not supporting places that do not support us. And so,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I concur. I think, I mean, would you like for me to tell my personal experience of being in the financial? Because we're friends. So this is not like, and we text all the time. So it's a little bit different. I mean, we have a different rapport, but like Tiffany and I have been in the grind. Basically, we've been talking for the past year about navigating going into financial planning and whatnot, taking classes. So we both have finished our MBA within the same time frame. We both tried to finish our CFP work and didn't finish it, which is a whole nother, I don't want to talk about that. And so we do have experiences on that. The hardest thing about navigating the financial industry is really being sure of yourself. That's the hardest thing. Because when I first got my first job in finances, I changed my hair. So I straightened my hair, which you do every once in a while, but I straightened my hair for my picture. I used my middle name. This is 2018, y'all. I use my middle name. And a lot of folks, I got in trouble a lot because I spoke up for certain things. I feel like now I've done a lot of work, even with writing the book. But I'm one person who already did social justice work. Like I did TFA. I went to UC Berkeley. So I had the wherewithal to be like, this is just a phase. This is just that, you know, I've had my accounting teacher tell me in front of the class that I don't know anything in front of everybody and apologize to me behind closed doors. So what I'm saying is everybody is going through that. And that, I mean, it clearly deals with resilience and strength and different things like that. But we have a long way to go. We really do. And when it comes to trying to help folks understand communities of color and then understand Ujima or are we talking about Umoja? I'm used to saying all
the things, right?
All the kinds of things. When you talk about all of that, I think it's really important to see where even the person of color that's trying to enter in it, how they're being barred from the different things, how they're being blocked from it. I am one person that's trying to eliminate what do we call it? Generational wealth. That's what, or generational curse. That's what all the Black people say. They're like, I'm going to rebuke this generational curse or whatever. So you know what I'm talking about when people my family bind, they curse it. Okay. So I'm the one that's basically the person that deals with money. And I have 9 great aunts. I have 50 cousins. One person doing the work for everybody, that's a lot of stuff. So I really try to make sure that I'm doing yoga and I'm doing the women of color meditations and different things like that, because there's so much, there's a layer. It's you, but you don't recognize how you're affected. And so that's why I wrote the book too, because I wanted to make sure that I had other people's stories, and I didn't want it to be trauma porn, but you can't help it because it's kind of people just told me a bunch of stuff. So I had to just write what they said. But yeah, it's pretty tricky.
Yeah. And You said so much right there. I'm like, which point do I want to jump in at?
I know. You, anytime stuff like that would happen, especially like in finance, I would be like, okay, we got to start over. Okay, we got to start over. Like, I've been fired because I said this is white. I was like, I don't like this, like, white. When you and I talked about this, but I was like, this is too white. And I've gotten fired. But the same day I got hired. So it's like, it's like people have to be really careful about it. But it's like, at this point, I feel like I have 136 citations. I can back up what I'm saying. I got it.
Right. And so I guess I'll jump in like with my experience working in the industry. So first and foremost, when you say that you work in finance, people automatically assume that you sell insurance or you do taxes, because that's the majority of what, you know, people of color do. And so when we say that we do something different, it's like, what? You do what? And it's hard to get into those doors because, as we both know, the financial industry is majority old white male, right? And we don't fit in any of those categories. So it's very hard to, and the thing about it is, and what I've learned is that you have to be overly qualified. So like, for instance, how me and you, we both have MBAs, right? When I was working at a firm, the only other person that had an MBA was the owner. Everybody else was just, you know, just had bachelor's degrees and they were fine. But it takes extra for us to even get our foots into the, our feet, ooh, foots, get our feet into the door and make that happen. Now, I went about it a different way because I'm very, you know how you said you straighten your hair and things like that. These locks aren't going anywhere. I don't care who you are, what you think. You know, my philosophy is, and even when I was in HR, if you have a problem with my hair, then that's not a place that I want to work anyway. Because if you value my hair over my knowledge, over what I bring to the table, then I don't want to work for you. What do I need to work for you for? Right. So, you know, when I was working, you know, in the firms and things like that, you know, I had my locks, I had my unks, I had my unapologetically black earrings, I had my African attire. I didn't care because at the end of the day, I'm comfortable that I know my stuff. And so if you decide that I'm too black for you, then why are we even here?
Yeah.
Why are we even here? So luckily, the firm that I did work at, they were very, you know, accepting of me, which is crazy to say, but, you know, that's just the reality of the situation. Now, I will say, and this is with any job, really, not even just the corporate world, but this goes all the way to if you're in trades and things like that, people will have microaggressions, right? And so, you know, sometimes it comes in the form of, and we're kind of getting off track, but I gotta let this out. Sometimes it's in the form of, oh, how did you do that to your hair? Oh, let me see. Oh, like, I'm not a petting zoo, you know? You know.
Well, there's also YouTube videos. Like, when people say stuff like that, if you're like, I'm curious, go look it up. I don't have time. They've got movies. They have documentaries about good hair and how people view it. And you're like, what? So it's like, just Google it.
Right. I'll never forget one time I came in with my locks done a different way. So I had them in links. And so they were short, maybe like that short. And they were like, oh my gosh, did you cut your hair? Oh, I wish I could do my hair like that. Oh my gosh, your hair is so versatile and this, that, and the other. And I'm just like, what?
Yeah. That's a whole nother thing. Like, I feel like we all have. Well, you and I and a bunch of other people, we have like black CFP rants. We have like a black, we have like, we're going to pass this CFP group. And so I think when we're talking to circle back to Kwanzaa and Ujima and collaborative and restorative practice. I think it's really important for you to find the tribe that you want to work with when it comes to dealing with your money. I wrote in the book kind of my money story journey, and my biggest thing was I have to have folks that look like me that talk about this and help me navigate it. But if I am working with someone who's white, they have to know the word allyship. If they don't know, that's like the simplest thing. So if they understand that word, then I will work with them. If they don't, then that means I have to do extra work in addition to understanding my family's trauma, my family's information, carrying stuff for other women of color too. That's too much work for me. I'm losing money. And then we're going back to the back to black tax. Lots of folks are asking for resources to folks of color, marginalized groups, black folks. And it's like, look it up yourself, because it's a tax. I took my time. I took 25 minutes out of my day to find resources for you. I need you to do a little bit more work. Unless, like, I just had a great conversation with two groups of girls who have like 3 million downloads for their podcast. I've reached out to them and I said, you guys need to talk about this, because people are going to listen to you because you're white. You need to talk about it, and you need to tell people like how you go through the process. I will give you these resources. That black tax, that's going to work in my flavor and my blessing. I'm not dumb. So I also know that like that is something that folks really need to be cognizant of. Everyone's like, I'm curious. You need to type in what is a white person's guide to understand. You need to Google it. There's no more excuses. And I think the last thing, because I feel like we're about to wrap up.
I mean, we don't have to.
I mean, the last thing is, when it comes to race, wealth, the black dollar, black women, black men really need to take time to heal and really need to take time to reflect on a lot of stuff. And I think what's happening, and you can tell me this or not, I'm literally right now retracing all the trauma that's happened to me in my life based off of all of these deaths that happened. Because in my mind, I'm thinking, well, I don't know how much time I have to live. It's a very scary thing to think that, right? Even to be in the position where you're thinking like, how long will I live? Will I get hypertension? Because right now I have hemorrhoids. I've never got hemorrhoids my entire life. I've always been like super healthy. And I have hemorrhoids. I'm like, this is crazy. So I think right now you really need to take time and try to learn how to heal. Get a journal. Like the simplest step is get a journal and write out how you're feeling. Write out all the scenarios that's happened. If you have a platform, talk about those things. You have to get all of that out, because at this point, if we're trying to change and we're trying to move into a new millennial, we need to shed a lot of stuff before we can do any of some of the work.
Right. And I completely agree. And so that's why we're here, because I'm like, I have a platform. I need to use my platform to talk about these issues, because it's a lot. It's a lot. All day Sunday, I slept because I was just mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually exhausted. I was exhausted.
Sorry.
You're fine. But I was exhausted.
You can get a snack.
Trust me, I locked myself in a closet for this because
I noticed that. I was like, what?
I know my kids. I locked my office door and then I locked the closet door just in case they decide to pick that lock. But
I'm sorry. You were saying something very profound, so I'm sorry.
But I was just saying, you know, it's a lot. What's going on right now is a lot. It's been a lot for years and years and years, and people are finally getting tired of it. People are finally acknowledging it and being more aware of what's going on. And I count that as a win in of itself. But also, like you were saying, protect your peace, protect your mental health, protect your well-being, because like Saturday, Sunday, so after I protested on Saturday, I just slept. I just had to. It was just a lot. It was a lot to process. It was just a lot going on. Every time you get on social media, you know, you see stuff and, you know, it just starts the cycle all over again. So like you were saying, you just have to protect your space. And so I've been posting a lot on social media, but I've also been taking social media breaks throughout the day, because when I feel myself starting to get wound up, I'm like, okay, now it's time for me to just back away and come back fresh in a little bit. Because what I don't want to happen is we channel this into anger, and then we end up not getting anything done. And that's what's been happening, especially in my case. So I'm like, okay, Tiffany, you have the information, you have processed the information, you have shared the information, you put the information out there. Now, what are you gonna do? Now what? Because you can share and you can tell and you can do but so much for so long, to where it needs some action behind it as well. And so that's why I was like, you know what, this episode of Money Talk with Tiff is going to be dedicated to the Black dollar and to what we can do, you know, looking at the Kwanzaa principles, Ujima, Ujamaa, Umoja, how we can bring those to the current. It doesn't just have to be a once a year thing, you know, it can be all throughout the year. And what I see happening now with the unity going on, with the collective work and responsibility, with the cooperative economics, like I've seen so many people posting about Black owned businesses or minority owned businesses or, you know, things of that nature. To me, I'm excited. I'm excited because this is the wave I have been on for so long. And I'm just glad that more people are joining the wave. Now, I don't want this to just be a wave where it's like, oh, you know, we did it for the culture and now it's over. We can go back to our normal lives. No, this needs to be something that is ongoing. Like I said, I wholeheartedly believe that we should withhold our dollars from the people that don't support us or are perpetuating the hate and perpetuating racism, because it doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help anybody. At the end of the day, even the people that are racist, right? At the end of the day, when that racism is shown, somebody's getting hurt.
Yes, hurt people hurt people.
Exactly. Hurt people hurt people. That
dropping bombs today. It's so funny because when you're like at home and you're just like, you know, reading and doing all the work and you're like, okay, what do I need to tell? How, you know, I think what a beautiful time it is, because we're in a really difficult time, but it's beautiful because it's like, feels like all the work that I've been doing is like finally giving birth. So now that everybody's like panicking, freaking out, like what's going on, you're like it's like you're ready for it, because you're waiting for something like this to happen. You don't want to say that, but you're waiting for something where folks are kind of shaken a bit to talk about this. I literally today talked about how when I lived in the DR, like all the racial trauma that I experienced being there and like looking like the population and not being really the population, being American in that space. And I'm like, yeah, I should be talking about all of this stuff. Everybody should be talking about this stuff. And I think particularly Black folks don't have the opportunity to do so, because we're always trying to keep up with everyone, like the Joneses, the Kardashians, the Carters. There's a lot of folks that we're all trying to like emulate. And it's time for us to kind of like bring back and check in with ourselves first before we can do anything else.
This is so true. This is so true. So, and mic drop. No. Yeah. So, Eugene, where can people find you? I know you've gone over this spiel back in episode 11, but for our new listeners and people here on Facebook Live, where can they find you?
I mean, if you're on Facebook, you just find my website or just click on my thing or whatever. And if you want to add me, I don't really have that many folks. I just don't. There's just a lot of people that kind of come at you. But I'm very active on Twitter. Very, very active. So if you want to find me there, I'm there. And I do a lot more talks. I'm also, you know, now that there's a book launch, I mean, you can find the book at EugeneGeorge.com. You can get the first chapter. And that's already out and ready. And then June 14th is when the book will be in print. So it'll be on demand, and it'll be on Amazon and then all the other platforms. But I don't know. But I think the biggest thing for me is like, and I want to let other people know about this, like Black Tax and whatnot. When I came up with this idea, people thought it was absolutely crazy. And a lot of folks were like, I don't know if you could actually get a book deal. I don't know. So I basically went the self-publishing route, which meant I ended up losing a lot of money doing so. I know that right now it's gonna play out in a very different way with what's happening. But I think that's really important. Use the resources that you have, because it took me 2 years and $2,000 to get this book up and running. And I still owe people money. I still have student loans. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to like let people know that I'm like a real person, because I know you sell the books, but it's, you know. So yeah, just know that the book is about telling people stories, and that's what really matters. And then hopefully, if y'all know of the agent, please let me know.
And I'm going to plug right there. But you know what? You know what? That's another thing I tell people. You don't know unless you ask. You don't know unless you put it out there into the universe, because you don't know who's watching. You don't know who's right. An agent could be watching right now. And they're like, oh, she knows her stuff. Let me hit up Eugene. You don't know. I know it sounds far-fetched and it sounds funny, but you really don't know. And yeah. So I commend you. Thank you so much for doing the work. You know, we always talk about this stuff, but to put it out here, and thank you for coming on with me and my shenanigans, because literally, people, I was like, Eugene, you want to hop on an episode with me? Plot twist, it needs to be recorded today. Plot twist, let's do it live.
Yeah.
She was just down for the cause. So I appreciate you. And I'm sure a lot of people got a lot of good information from this. And I will drop in the comments and also in the show notes links to all of these films and books and everything that we mentioned, because it's good information and it's stuff that you need to self-educate on. So thank you so much. And I hope you all have a wonderful day.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Money Talk with Tiff podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to moneytalkwitht.com. And while you're there, why not sign up for our newsletter so you'll never miss an episode? Talk to you soon.